eat.
Oh, so good.
Drink. Talk. Rick Redding and Steve Coombs serve up savory conversations about Louisville's world-famous restaurant food and drink scene. The wine is uncorked, the bourbon neat, the apps are on the table. Here comes the main course.
And here we are again. We made it back for week number three of the Eat, Drink, Talk podcast. This is Rick Redding, your host with co-host, I guess, with Steve Coombs. And Steve, we had a big week this week.
It was a big week.
It was.
Still is a big week.
Now, let me fill our audience in. For those that don't listen, I know we've got a lot of new listeners because the response to your Facebook post, and maybe it would be better if you just explained what happened.
Well, after 70 months and 882 stories, I left Insider Louisville on Wednesday, I believe it was, and made that known through my Facebook page, and the outpouring of support was just fantastic. And when I say support, we're talking about the decision to focus on my Louisville restaurant and bar and drinking and spirits coverage on this project at Eat, Drink, Talk. So people are really excited.
Yeah, it's really great. And for those of you, I think we should welcome in all those people that responded on Facebook that said, oh, we're going to figure out how to listen to podcasts now, now that we have this podcast. It's really great. And we're going to try to make it fun and interesting. We got a lot of fun things to talk about, not only the publicity over Eat, Drink, Talk, and we posted some stories on there that were really good, I thought. But we also had some fun this week. You got to judge a bourbon contest.
Yes, it was a Four Roses bourbon cocktail contest, and it was down at the BBC Bourbon Barrel or Four Roses Bourbon Barrel Lofts, which is the top floor of that building on, was it Third and Main?
Third Main, right across from the Yum Center.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. And so there were about, I think there were 11 bartenders, local folk, who came and created crazy craft cocktails, and that were centered on Four Roses Yellow Label Bourbon, and a lot of them leaned toward kind of a summer feel with a lot of citrus, a lot of fruit syrups and such like that, and it was really interesting.
So wait a minute, 11. Bartender. Now, here's the natural question from a neophyte like me. How do you keep from getting drunk?
You sip. You do not gulp. And in this case, we had no choice but to sip lighter than I ever had. It was the first contest that I've been in where we used, they call it straw sipping. Basically, you just take your finger on one end of the straw, dip it in the drink, and you taste it. Which was not my favorite because I really think that a big part of judging a cocktail's, well, any kind of a spirit for that matter, is a mouthfeel. And sure. How does it lay on the palate? How does it smell when that glass is near your nose as you're taking a sip? And I'm certainly not criticizing because I wouldn't say that I'm an expert in that area, though I'm knowledgeable. But it was unusual to not drink those drinks.
Well, nobody uses a straw when they're drinking alcohol, I don't think, at least not often.
Right. Not in public, because he would say, that's weird.
Yeah, they start with a straw, pull the straw out, start drinking. Yeah,
that's right. It gets in the way and scratches your face sometimes. I mean, for heaven's sakes, it's hazardous.
How am I going to get the salt from the from the margarita without with the straw?
Sure. Right. It was a cool contest. I judged it with Larry Rice from El Camino and Silver Dollar, and Susan Riegler, who's the author of a couple of bourbon books, and another local writer. So it was a good time.
Well, very good. Well, we're going to hear about El Camino in just a few minutes. I thought the fun thing to talk about, the best thing about doing this Eat, Drink, Talk thing, and you're used to it, I'm not, is getting invited to special events, right?
Oh, it's a blast. It's a blast until they're over, and then you're just like, oh my gosh, I just want to go home and go to bed because we've had multiple courses.
Well, I know. Well, I'll tell you about mine. I got invited by Ballantyne Whiskey to go to Buck's Restaurant this week, and they had a 5-course dinner, and it was all the courses had some flavoring by the chef, Coulter Hupsch. Is a new chef over there. Great young guy. He came out, and he introduced each dish. He talked a little bit about it, where it came from, all that stuff. It was so much fun. It did take forever. I mean, we were there a good 2 or 3 hours, but it's just a really cool event.
It's an experience to go through one of those things.
Yeah.
And people don't know what a treat it is, or it's sometimes that's wrong to even think it's a chore, because it just takes a long time to go through.
Yeah.
So you're wise to skip lunch and definitely not plan to do anything once you go home other than go to bed.
Well, I did both those things wrong. So,
but well, I can top that.
Yeah,
I went to an 11 course.
11 courses, which I can't like really imagine.
Well, I mean, to me, that's kind of how our portions should be in this country. Much, much smaller. I mean, yeah. I always call it dining for ADD people like me, in that you get lots of little tastes of things. And Chef Michael Crouch at Bistro 1860.
Guest on the show last week.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he talked about the meal too. It was just amazing. One after another after another. And I got to take my wife and my son for his high school graduation present.
Awesome.
To go there and watch them experience that. And it was a blast.
Well, good. Well, I'm going to go ahead and tell you about the Bucks thing. We always have on this show our things we like best that we experienced during the week, and hopefully every week we'll get to do something cool and fun. So when I walked in to Bucks, the best thing I had to drink this week, they were serving up as you walked in the door something called a Ballantyn Whiskey Kiss.
What's it? How lovely.
It was just a little drink. Now, I don't know this
term. Kind of like a Hershey's Kiss, I guess, is maybe the pun there.
Or? Well, that's the pun. It's chocolate. And right. You tell me, is it Prosecco?
That's correct.
Okay, Prosecco and the Ballantyn chocolate. And it was just in a little martini glass. And it was just really a great way to start the evening.
So that was your favorite drink of the week?
That was number one.
And I'm still over here trying to figure out what I would point to as my favorite. Certainly the most interesting was I got a sample from Four Roses of Elliott's Select, and that is the name of Brent Elliott, who is the master distiller down there. This is his first solo project in terms of choosing a single barrel bourbon. And this, I believe, is a $129 retail bottle.
Wow.
And it's big and interesting, and it's got a lot of firepower to it. And I've only had one brief sample of it, and I need to go back and take my notes, and I'll do a review on it. But trust me, it's Four Roses, so it's very flavorful, and it's going to be very good. And I'll get to interview him for this podcast in a couple of weeks.
Okay. We're going to have all those types of people that are involved in the making of the product right here on the show. It's really going to be great. So 11 courses, did something come out of there as the top thing you ate this week?
It was hard to choose. And everybody that I was talking to last night as we left was, you know, could not decide what was their favorite course. But I did have, it was a steamed crab leg that was served over corn. And I'm trying to think of what was in the corn that made it. It was like a high-end creamed corn. And it was just such superb seafood. It's hard to say that wasn't my favorite bite, but there was also some sashimi with jalapeno, and it was paired with the Prosecco. Now we're back to Prosecco, which is fantastic. Hard to choose.
Well, for people that are just listening to this, you can go on the Eat Drink Talk website and see pictures of all these dishes that you had. And I have pictures of the ones that I had at the Ballantyn dinner. My favorite there was they had course number two, I think, was shrimp. It was a pecan encrusted shrimp, and it had this great little sauce with just a hint of chocolate on it. I think it was the caramel turtle chocolate, and that was a memorable several bites. They had four. So I was telling you, we were laughing about the other thing was that the dessert was ice cream with the chocolate on it and everything, and I know it's the trendy thing, but I think the ice cream was ruined because it had bacon in it.
Bacon. We were joking before the show that I never hear anybody say that putting bacon in something made it worse. and Rick, I've known him a long time, and he will usually kind of qualify his statements and say, you know, I'm not a gourmand, and maybe that's not me, but you.
It just didn't taste good.
It didn't. Yeah, I can understand that. It's that sweet and savory pairing sometimes that throws people, and smoke generally is not a characteristic you're going to find in a dessert, so.
Right. I guess I just wanted a chocolate milkshake and be done with it.
But you were game. You got in, man.
That was it. I tried everything.
You dared step out.
It was fun. All right. So we also came across something online this week, Steve, that we want to talk about. You know, the Best of Louisville Awards by Louisville Magazine is a big deal in this town, and they rank all the restaurants by, like, category and everything. And,
right.
And so apparently the way the thing works, I didn't read the fine print, but they come down to three finalists in each category. Right. And so we're going to sort of have some fun with some of those categories, right?
Which That's one? Right, because we don't agree with all of them.
And I've
some we do.
Yeah, I think you've probably been to all of them. I've been to most, at least, and certainly I would have some opinions on them. I see the you know, best new restaurant. That's always an interesting category. There's a lot of new places. I haven't been to any of the new restaurants on the list, but you have.
So that was the finalists are Butchertown Grocery, Lemieux, and John Veronese's River House. I would jump all over Lemieux. That's to me, it's just fantastic. It's a very daring restaurant in terms of its decor. Not that it's racy at all, but it looks like absolutely nothing else in town, and it's crazy good. Pricey can be, okay. but I think it's fantastic, and that's hard to put it ahead of Butchertown Grocery. But yeah, Lemieux is something totally off the wall. I love it.
All right, what else stood out on the list?
Well, the best pizza. I wasn't crazy about some of the finalists there. Now, Birno's, I'm sorry, it's not my favorite. Wick's, I have a lot of respect for Michael Wickliffe, and that really deep, heavily piled pizza is not my favorite, but the place is busy, so that shows, you know, that pizza's very personal. Right. Tony Boombot's, I think, is always reliable. I think it's fantastic. I mean, and it's delivered gourmet pizza. Nobody else does it. But, so where's the post?
Well, you know, my son Josh, when he was in town, we have this thing called Pizza Club, me and my sons, and we try to go to different pizza joints. And you know, I think the thing is, you know, there's a lot of places to get pizza in town, but a one-of-a-kind restaurant like The Post, and it's a great atmosphere right there in Germantown. It's on the top of my list, I think, just from just for that fact. I mean, that there's not like which one are you going to. It's
right.
Going to The Post.
Well, and to be a bit of a pizza snob, I used to cover it for 9 years. Was a great part of my career. And I shouldn't say a snob, because I really believe pizza's, you know, universal and kind of ecumenical, and people like to have it their own way. But there are three distinct styles that weren't even represented on this list, and that's the Garage Bar's Neapolitan style, which is the mother of all pizzas, and then Cole's, which is a fantastic pizza and a pizzeria done coal-fired way. That was the way it was originally done in New York City. And then, like I said, The Post, which is the only true New York-style pizza in this town. So I was a bit put off by that.
Maybe we need more pizza categories.
Perhaps we do. Well, you know, the best special occasion restaurant kind of set me off my feed, too. Jeff Ruby's and Ruth's Chris were in there, and they're not even locally based restaurants, bothers me a bit. Mm-hmm. Jack Fry's was on there, which I think is fantastic, always fantastic. But where's Corbett's, for heaven's sakes?
Exactly.
I mean, that's the specialist of special occasion places. And Lily's. I mean, these are just a couple that came to mind. I mean, I would throw Bistro 1860 on special occasion.
Yeah, I don't know why a lot of people that I know, you know, they are unwilling to take a chance and rely and go on something that's not something they already know they're comfortable with. And so, you know, it's easy to say, you know, Ruth's Chris, it's got a national reputation,
right,
and all that. We've got to go there. And I'm sure it's fine, but
it is.
The ones you mentioned are also, you know,
when we're
really
talking
great.
Best of Louisville, let's talk about Louisville. Let's not talk about ones that came here. And nothing against Jeff Ruby's either. I mean, fantastic restaurant from what I understand, but it's a Cincinnati company.
Maybe the other category is best out of town chain. You know,
perhaps.
We can do that.
Why not?
We can throw them all in together.
Why not? Best Latin American one. That was okay. El Mundo, fantastic. Love it. El Nopal, really?
Yeah, no.
Kind of generic.
No, and, thanks.
And Havana Rumba, I love it. Reliable, but it's not, you know, it's not distinguished anymore. The fact that Artisano wasn't on there, oh my gosh, why wasn't that on Best New Restaurant?
It shouldn't ceviche be at the top of the list? Am I in left field here?
It's absolutely. That's one of my top three restaurants in town. Now, why that wasn't on the special occasion list either? I don't know. I mean, ceviche is fantastic. And No Mojito Tapas Restaurant, I still think that's one of the best Latin American restaurants in town. But then again, I should say it's one of my favorite.
There you go.
Best is highly subjective.
Well, maybe in reaction to this, or at some point on eDrink Talk, the website, we'll get together and write a piece about what we think, and our list will be the right one.
Oh, we will. Yes, and it will be the right one. Absolutely. Best brunch. Weird. Where's Luvino? There's no Oak Room. There's no Village Anchor.
I tell you, I'm with you 100% on all that. That's there. We want to. You know, part of what we're doing on this show is promoting local restaurants and trying to convince, you know, the public to try these places that you don't go to because you've never heard of it or
absolutely.
Or all right, so what are we going to do next on the show, Steve?
We've got our guests.
To talk about our guests, don't we?
Absolutely. This is going to be a lot of fun to listen to this week. So the worst kept secret in the Louisville restaurant industry has been that El Camino is moving. And several weeks ago, I talked to Larry Rice about that and said that I wanted to write the story. And he said, if you would be kind and wait, I'll let you have the exclusive on that if you would wait. And why do you want to wait? He said, because people hear moving and they think closing. And that's mm-hmm. happened. I've already seen in my own Facebook feed, people say, is it closing? No, it's moving.
No matter what you say, they ask that question.
That's right. Those are great people. They're respectable operators and have always been good to me in helping me cover stories about their restaurants. So we waited, and then my wife and I are walking down Bardstown Road the other day, and some guy's walking near El Camino on the same side of the sidewalk, and he goes, you know that place is moving, don't you? And I said, if random people are talking about it, it's time to talk about this thing. So they are, and they're going to Germantown. And they don't exactly know when this summer that's going to happen, but they've got it narrowed down to two sites in Germantown, and okay. That's where it'll go.
Well, when are they going to clear out in the Highlands?
That has yet to be determined also. Okay. The company that's going in there has not given them an official date as to when they're going to move in. So it's kind of a series of dominoes that have to fall.
Okay. Well, I talked to a lot of people. It's such a great spot in the Highlands. It's very popular. It's hard to believe something that seems so successful from the outside is
needing
leaving.
To move.
Yeah.
Well, it was successful in terms of in the industry they call it transactions, mm-hmm. or the amount of people, you know, the amount of checks that go out, you know, paid at the table, people coming in, leaving. That's a transaction, and they had a high number of transactions. However, the average of the transaction, check average, was too low. And so why was that? Because everybody loves tacos. Mm-hmm. And that was
tacos are cheap.
That's right. They're inexpensive, and they don't pay the bills quite as well as some of the higher-priced entrees. And they very smartly said, well, this appears to be the demographic we're attracting, and we maybe would have a better fit in Germantown. And they own the building. The Cantleys own the building, and they will lease it to an out-of-town restaurant company.
Okay, which some people are lamenting the fact that we've got another out-of-town restaurant infiltrating the Highlands Corridor. But
right.
No, that's an argument for another day, I guess.
Absolutely.
Hey, speaking of the average per check, I learned something last week I didn't know on the Rusty Satellite Show. I had Mike Mays of Honey Brothers on there.
Right.
You know what the average check is at a coffee shop?
I would think $4.
It's a little better than that. It's about 5.25. And that's what Mike told me is why they have to do a lot of volume.
Right.
They have a lot of transactions to make a coffee shop economically work. So anyway, just something I learned I didn't know.
Let's talk about your guest this
week. Well, thank you. I was always interested in people that are organizing big events. And I know you know Todd Ants over at Keg Liquors in
great
well,
guy.
In New Albany. I went over and saw him at his store. It was, he is very excited about the upcoming Festive Ale event, which is mm-hmm. moving locations. They get 15.
Everybody moving.
Everybody's moving. 1,500 people go to this beer festival, and you know, it's 11 years old. He was doing it before, you know, there was a beer festival every weekend.
Right,
you know,
right.
So he's one of the like.
His may well have been the first in the area. It's fantastic, and I've gone to the ones at they're on the campus at the University of Padua,
St. Padua,
St. Anthony of Padua.
Okay,
and it, totally flat grounds, wide open, tree covered in the end. You could bring your lawn chairs. Great vibe. They got fantastic breweries there. So I'm excited to see what it's going to do in New Albany. So talk about
that. Well, Todd knows a lot about beer, and he's really excited about the new location and the new grounds. But I tell you, I encourage people to stick around and listen to the interview. I talked a little bit to Todd about the sort of Kentucky-Indiana divide on
it's like the River Styx, for heaven's sakes. Gosh.
It bothers him a bit that people are hesitant to cross the river and cross the bridge, and he's especially upset about the coming toll thing. So,
right.
You know, that's going to have a big effect on people, as he said, going either way. I mean, why would you go across the river and pay $4 or whatever it is when you could stay right where you're at, no matter which side you're on?
Right, right. So is the festival going to be bigger? Does he talk about that?
They expect to sell out. They have a certain number of tickets. I think it's 1,500 tickets. And, you know, a lot of breweries we talked about, you know, there are certain beers that you can get in Indiana, but you can't get in Kentucky.
Right, absolutely.
So the laws.
Sun King being one of them, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you know what they are, but anyway, I really enjoyed going over there and talking to him. It's a great liquor store over there too.
It's an experience, and a lot of those, especially that one. When I think about the festivals I've been to, I always go there with something handy to write down the beers that I tasted and said I got to go buy that one. And that's when I found out the hard way the Sun King's not available in Kentucky.
Okay.
So anyway.
Well, I will say one thing. Speaking of Beer Fest, there's another one coming up June 11th in J-Town, where I live, right down the street. I can stumble home from that one. So I encourage you to come. I'm actually going to volunteer to pour beer out there, and it's a lot of fun. It's the second year they've had it out there.
One for you, one for me. Is that how it's going to go, Rick?
That's right. You don't have to, you know, account for how much beer is gone.
Spillage.
So, you really don't.
It's going down your mouth.
So I'll be out there with like the mayor and all the city officials and all that. They're all behind it. The whole community is behind this event, and it sold out last year. It was just tremendous. So
excellent.
So anyway, let's get on our interviews. First, one more thing. Memorial Day weekend. It's a holiday. People are probably going to be listening to this as they're in a weekend frame of mind. What's going on that you would recommend?
I've got two graduation parties to go to this weekend, so being out on the town is not going to happen.
Well,
and
there you go.
All my money is going to presents.
Well, that's a good thing in a way too. You do know Abbey River on the Abbey Road on the river is this weekend, and also it's a big weekend for music, the Kentucky Reggae Festival down at the Water Tower. I've been to that several
reggae
years.
Bon,
it is really a cool place.
Is it a good festival?
I love watching the people and the booths where they sell all the Jamaican stuff. It's a pretty cool experience if you get a chance to go out there. And then on Monday we'll be at the Mayor's Hike and Bike Monday morning. I'm sure you don't do that, but I do that every year as well.
Yeah, you'll be there. I won't. I should be, but I won't.
9 o'clock in the morning on Monday. I'll see you at Waterfront Park. But, okay, well, we've had a lot of fun. Episode 3 is underway. I encourage you to stick around after the interview with Larry Rice of El Camino to hear from Todd Ants of about Fest of Ale in New Albany. And, Steve, it's been a lot of fun.
Awesome, man. Let's do it again next week.
Head coach of the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers, Jeff Rom. Today I'm with Matt Jones,
Kevin Harned,
Pat 40.
But I'm with the new Chariot,
Kristen Wall,
United States Congressman John Yarman,
Sarah Brofancher,
and Susie Eastman.
I have Kristen Boone,
one of St. Matthew's most favorite sons, Danny Flanagan.
It's Pat Day.
The list goes on and on. The most interesting people in the Ville are on the Rusty Satellite Show with Rick Redding. New episodes Thursdays on Louisville.am.
This week we're talking to Larry Rice, operating partner of El Camino and the Silver Dollar. Welcome to the show, Larry.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You know, we love having people on who are moving around, moving up and down in this business, and we're excited to talk a little bit about what's going to happen with El Camino's move. It's been running around as a rumor for some time now. Talk about exactly what's going to happen and why.
Okay, so I know a lot of people have been saying that El Camino's closing down, which isn't going to happen. We've actually...
Not at all. No closing.
Yeah, we've had a great response from the public. We're crowded all the time, but we're looking at Germantown right now. We've got a couple properties that we're looking at, and it will just be making a move to Germantown. Same concept. I feel like we've tweaked it to the point that we like it and that our guests like it. And honestly, the space is just so large that we're in right now, I feel like we'd have to tweak the concept for the space. And I'd rather find the space that fits the concept that we love.
Now, we've talked a little bit about why you guys are moving. And some of it was a decision tied to the menu and what people bought. Explain that.
Well, so we opened up with, you always open up with your idea of what you think's great, what you think people are going to love, and then you realize what they want from you. And when we opened up, you know, we had Brian Inyart come down. He did our menu. He put his wedding mole on there, several other like very labor-intensive dishes. Everybody loved our tacos. That's awesome. I love the tacos, too. it's just tough to be in a space on Bardstown Road and be selling $3 tacos.
So check average is not what you guys needed it to be for the space.
Well, it's lower than we expected because we sell way more tacos than we sell entrees, for sure. It's actually, if it makes sense to you, it's actually lower than what we have at the Silver Dollar. Our check average is about $6 lower ahead.
But the menu prices overall are a little bit cheaper at Silver Dollar too, right?
Depends on how you look at it. Like, we don't have anything as cheap as the taco, but we sell a lot of burgers and chili at Silver Dollar. The menu prices, the way we designed it, we consider to be very, very much in line with each other. We just sell a lot more entrees at the dollar.
What do you think it'll look like once it's there? You know, some of those issues you talked about that you didn't sell as well as you had hoped, are they just going to disappear?
No, I hope we bring a few of them back, actually. We've taken a few off already, like the wedding mole, for instance, because it's a very labor-intensive all-day thing. In a smaller kitchen with less financial restraints, we'll be able to do a lot of that. We can take loss leaders more lightly in those scenarios than we do right now. I also love Germantown. I don't know if you know, but I've lived in Germantown for almost 10 years now. We're about to open another bar there. And the growth, everyone knows the growth in Germantown's about to explode. And I want to be, we're already going to be there with the Pearl, which is going to be our neighborhood bar, but I'd like to be even more part of it. Like, I moved into Germantown like 10 years ago, rented a house as like a temporary thing, and just fell in, like, me and Susie didn't move for like 5 years because we didn't find another house in Germantown that fit all the needs we wanted. And then we finally did, so we moved a block and a half away from the house we were living in. But had no idea I was going to fall in love with the neighborhood as much as I did and just stay there.
Will El Camino as a restaurant concept fit better in Germantown than perhaps it is in the Highlands right now?
I think so. I think a lot of our guests are going to be the same. You know, I always jokingly tell my out-of-town friends, nothing in Louisville's over a mile and a half away that you're going to, probably.
Right.
And it's not...
complain about the drive.
Yeah, right. and to be honest, it is almost exactly 1.5 miles from the spaces we're looking at, both spaces we're looking at, and where it sits right now. But it is a different world when you go over there. Parking's easier, traffic's not as bad. I think we'll have a lot of the same guests, but I also think we'll create more regulars because of the convenience of being able to come to it.
Just being able to walk more, I would think.
Walk and just be more comfortable with the parking and the traffic. You know, like, doesn't matter how much I want to go somewhere, if I know that I'm going to sit in 20 minutes of traffic to get there, I may go there a lot less, you know.
Now, the bar at El Camino was something everybody's fond of as well.
We're
how much
changing.
Of that is going to not a change?
I mean, if any changes, it'll just be more of the same and better. Like, we really are proud of the bar program. Susie Hoyt's killed it. I thought it was a really lofty goal to open a 300 seat restaurant that did tiki because it's so labor intensive.
Right.
And we honestly weren't willing to not go all out. Like, we didn't take any shortcuts. Everything's done from scratch. We make all of our own syrups like a proper tiki bar should. We have 7 kinds of ice that we procure in-house, and we'd still do it. We pull it off with 300 seats. We're definitely not going to go backwards when we're talking more like the 200-220 range seating capacity.
My gosh, I mean, I have no idea what building that would be that would seat that many in Germantown. I know you're not going to tell me.
Well, I can't tell you because we don't have we haven't signed any papers yet. We're looking at more than one place.
Right.
But something is going to happen. It's going to happen soon. But I'm also talking when I'm saying 200-220. That'll be patio and interior space.
Right.
We're looking for more like 120-ish inside. Everything else would be outside.
Facing the road or off the main drags? Or
facing the road is definitely preference.
Absolutely. So what is it about the Germantown vibe? I mean, it used to be that it was blue collar, but now, and it's, can't say yet that it's even remotely gentrified, but there's a younger populace that's in there.
I think it's both right now, actually. There's like, it is still very blue collar. A lot of my neighbors are very blue collar and have lived there for 30 years. Mm-hmm. When I first moved in there, that's about all you had, except for people like me looking for cheap places to rent. And now, like, it's definitely changing there. Like, the cost of buying a home there is much more expensive than even 3 or 4 years ago. But I think you get a little bit of both. You get that, you know, 28 to 38 year old that out of college has a decent job, a little bit of expendable money, and you also have the guy who bought his house 30 years ago and got a really good deal, was close enough to downtown or close enough to where he worked, and he still lives there, and it really creates a nice, colorful neighborhood.
Is he coming for tacos, do you think? Or
I hope so.
Is he going to Checks?
Well, he's definitely going to Checks right now. and I don't think we're ever going to... I go to Checks. I mean, I don't think we're going to pull people away from Checks. And that's another thing, is like both places that we want to put in Germantown aren't meant to cannibalize what's already going on in Germantown. They're meant to complement them and get more people in from the Highlands, more people from downtown, even more people from the East End to show up there. In the South End, we're not far from the South End as well.
And best I can tell, there's no Latin competition there.
I mean, no, there's not. That I can think of offhand.
Right.
I'd hate to be proven wrong after doing this interview and saying there was nobody there doing it, but I can't think of anyone in Germantown, and I live there. So, I think really what will happen, I hope, is we'll bring people into town who never ate dinner in Germantown, and then they will find Checks, and they will find Lydia House and other places that maybe they haven't already found,
right.
Not the other way around.
So any idea what's going to go into the space that El Camino occupies right now?
It is a restaurant. The restaurant group hasn't made any public announcements, so I'm going to let them do that. But it will be a restaurant, and it will. We've already made a deal, so...
And you and your partner still own that building?
Well, I don't personally know.
You know,
Sean and Vanessa own the building. That's Sean's my business partner, Vanessa his wife, and boss. and then myself and Sean and our LLC with El Camino lease it from them.
I know it's exciting to go back or to be in Germantown where you're living now, but any bittersweet departure for the Highlands? I mean,
yes and no. Like, I really was proud of what we did with that space. Like, I love it. Like, I had a lot of fun. It was very nerve-wracking. If you've seen the Silver Dollar, you know that I'm a very, like, clean line kind of a designer, if you will. Not that I'm a designer, but I do help with that aspect of our business. And I had to kind of go all out with El Camino and try to make it make sense for Tiki, make sense for Mexican, which means a little bit of tack, you know, and without it actually just being tacky, you know. And I think that we did a really good job of it. I think we have a lot of, like, comfortable spots in that building. Even with the different tiers, you know, and I thought we did a really good job opening it up. So yeah, there'll be a little bit. I mean, you know, any place you open always takes a little bit of you, you know, like, and so there will definitely be a little bit of heartache that goes with the move. But I think that it's just like your next girlfriend always ends up being a little bit better because you're wiser,
right,
when you do it, you know.
Right, right.
Not that I've got any more girlfriends in front of me, because when Susie hears this, she knows that. I finally got to the right one.
And so, but thematically, will the decor carry over? Will it be some of the Day of the Dead stuff?
It'll be very similar, yeah. I really like how we identified ourselves in that space and what we were trying to do. Because you do have to be... We try to hint at what we would like you to expect when you come in without being very literal. And I thought we did a very good job of that.
So. Well, any fire pits? Fire tables?
Yeah, hopefully. Fire goes well with Tiki. You know, again, it depends on the property that we find and you know, and how we work with our architects to get it all done. But I'd like a lot of those same elements to show back up for sure.
So what about Polly's? Give me some updates on that.
So the Pearl.
Polly? Why did I say Polly's?
Well, Polly's is what it was. It was Polly's.
Polly's is a sensible
word. And it was Polly's way longer than it's been the Pearl, that's for sure. So... I'm very
well, it hasn't yet become the Pearl, I guess.
No.
In defense of me.
But but it will be soon. The Pearl will be opening up sometime in June. Licensing's almost finished. Our contractor's almost finished. Everything's almost. We expected
to open weeks ago. And you just told me you're fleeing town and going on vacation.
I am going on vacation for a couple of weeks.
Do you feel the least bit of shame, Larry?
I feel a little bit of anxiety over it because I will get calls from Susie about it. If they're waiting on me for anything, I will hear about it for sure. But I'm really excited. It's going to be a fun project that we're doing with lots of our management team. We've partnered in on this, which is the thing that I'm the most proud of in this. And we are going to open a neighborhood bar. As simple as that. Like, we've got a bunch of fun ideas that are very casual and very approachable for anybody. But we really, the idea behind this place is just like any neighborhood bar. We want it to grow with our guests and grow with our clientele. So that means that changes can come according to, you know, the whims of the guests, not the whims of the bartenders,
right,
or not the whims of the owners, you know.
Well, speaking of bartenders, you and I just got finished judging a Four Roses contest. When you step back and you look at the cocktail scene where it is in Louisville in 2016, what's your feeling about it? Because you've been in Chicago, you travel quite a bit. What is your feeling about this scene here and our bartenders?
I think that we've really come a long way. Like, I've been bartending, well, not anymore, but I bartended in this city for almost 20 years. And to be honest, for the first 12 years of that, I poured pints and whiskey, and then if I made a cocktail, it was really a highball, or a really bad version of what the cocktail was supposed to be, until I started traveling and I wanted to delve into it. But I mean, now you go into almost any bar. I mean, when I say almost any bar, even almost any restaurant bar, and they're going to have fresh juices, and they're going to have house-made syrups, and they're going to have bitters that they use, not just that one token bottle Angostura behind the bar that you're not sure when got purchased, you know. They're using Amaros, and they're using vermouths, and they're keeping them refrigerated now. Like, I mean, it's really come a long way, and like a lot of the cocktails I get in town are as good as what I get all across the country. There are those exceptional bartenders that you go purposely see, which is why I like to travel, that they amaze you. But some of the people in town are doing as good or better a job than anybody, in my opinion. And that's been really in the last 3 or 4 years that momentum's really started going, I think.
I think we've seen it here tonight.
Yeah, we had some great cocktails tonight. Yeah.
Absolutely. Larry Rice, thanks for being with us on Eat Drink Talk.
Thanks, sir.
Garcon, I think I'll have another.
I'm way over here in Indiana today. Just giving Todd Antz of Keg Liquors a little grief about being over here. Todd, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
And coming all the way over here, right?
Oh,
and
it was a long journey for you.
It was like 10 miles. you know, you are in charge of the Festivales event that it's your 11th year.
11th year, yes.
It's very exciting because you're changing locations this time. Mm-hmm. And give me a little of the history of this event.
So this event started out 11 years ago literally as a small celebratory party in the parking lot of my Clarksville location.
Okay.
So we brought a few of our good friendly breweries into town, set up some tents in the back parking lot of my store, and maybe had 75 to 100 people at the first event. So very small, very low key. Over the next couple of years, it grew and outgrew my space. So we moved over to St. Anthony's, a Catholic church slash school in Old Clarksville. That had a huge, huge lawn area that we were able to use. So we were able to grow the event from that 75-person first year to 1,500 people last year.
Okay, 1,500,
so,
wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's big. You know, they say from small things, big things come.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly that's what happens here. What do you attribute to? I mean, certainly when you did the first one, back then, there weren't that many beer festivals around here. Now it seems like there's one every weekend.
Yeah, you can't go anywhere now without another beer fest. I mean, you could look at the calendar. I know there's one the week after ours in J-Town, I believe.
And right.
Just keep going. They're there.
And why is it? What do you think it is? I mean, certainly, the joke I always say with people, well, we just got tired of drinking Bud Light, and we try to find something better and cooler to drink. But what's your view on how this whole concept has evolved?
It's been great to watch this go. I mean, again, 11 years. I've been in the business 11 years, and it's been awesome watching it go from a handful. You know, maybe we had 20 breweries available in the store to I've got over 1,000 different beers in my store now. I couldn't tell you how many breweries, how many countries, how many states, you name it. It used to be just a very, you know, you had your big boys like Sierra Nevada, if you could call them big boys, but Sierra Nevada, Sam Adams, and then regionally you had Three Floyds, you had Bell's out of Michigan. You know, those were kind of the big hitters at that time. And they're all still around, but now there's hundreds of breweries.
It seems like there's that many in the neighborhood now.
Oh, easily. I know Indiana, I know they crested the 100 brewery mark for the state.
Wow. That's really something. And right over here in this event on, I guess it's this weekend, it's June 4th, right?
June 4th, yes.
June 4th. 15,000 people, you think?
1,500 people.
1,500 people.
Sure.
And in the new location, that's got to be special.
It's going to be fantastic. So we're at the New Albany Amphitheater right on the riverfront in downtown New Albany. So you've got, of course, the scenery of the river right there. But we've got tons of land to actually hold our event down there. So we purposely kept the number at 1,500 again this year to get us comfortable with the space, to kind of mm-hmm. know we can do this, we can't do that. But we've got so much more of an opportunity to expand the event where okay. we're at New Albany than we've ever been able to do.
And it's all a fundraiser, right?
This is all a fundraiser. You know, our tack throughout the years has always been pay our bills off, write a check to the Crusader Children. So we never make a profit off this event. So last year we donated $14,000
wow.
to the Crusade. If we hit our goal this year, we set our goal at $15,000. That would actually put us over $100,000 that we've donated okay. to the Crusade over okay. the years.
And how in terms of the people that have shown up in the past, I mean, this one right on the river, you can see it from the bridge. It's really, I would think that, you know, we were joking about this great divide between Kentucky and Indiana, but it certainly seems friendly, a friendlier space for people to come over. Kentucky.
Oh, yes, because you're directly off of the I-64 bridge. You know, first exit, I believe it's Elm Street, and you're three blocks away from the event.
Okay.
Tons of public parking down there, so it'll be easy to accommodate people. Another big reason we made this move is the ability to do things before and after the event. You can make an entire day of downtown New Albany with all the local shops, local restaurants. So there are okay. things to do, especially afterwards. You need to cool your heels for a little bit after the event. Plenty of places to go out.
Yeah. So what if at the actual event, I guess, what's it cost to get in? And
tickets are $40 in advance, okay. and then they're $50 a day of, but we anticipate being sold out.
Okay.
So I would encourage people, get your tickets. If you haven't seen that we posted sold out, get them. The event will sell out. You can get them at both Keg Liquors locations in Clarksville and New Albany, or you can go to our website at kegliquors.com, and there's a nice big link there that says buy tickets
okay.
here.
Okay. All right, well, let me ask you a little bit about yourself, Mike, Todd, and how this, you know, your business, you've been around 11 years, is that right?
Mm-hmm. With me running it, yes. The family okay. business has been around since 1976.
Wow.
So I've been part of this for a long time, but 11 years running it on my own.
Okay. And what got you interested in this? I mean, I guess it was a young age. You're not that old, so it must have been early. Is it your first career?
No, this wasn't. So I had 10 years of corporate America. I was in the telecom industry. So
wow.
with AT&T and with Lucent, telecom manufacturer. And so big, ugly, old, ancient, 100-plus year corporations.
Yeah.
This
got to be a lot more fun than that.
You know, growing up in an entrepreneurial family, because again, yeah. family-owned business, going to corporate America and just really, really burning out. It was something to, you know, I'll say perfect opportunity, because my parents were ready to retire. I was ready to get the heck away from corporate America. So, you know, surprised my parents. I know we were living in Arizona at the time with Lucent.
Really?
And, you know, blew my parents away, you know, when I approached them about buying the store. I knew yeah. they were looking to retire, and like I said, I was ready to get the heck away from what I was doing. So
it's all about timing.
It was perfect timing for all of us. You know, we got to move back in the area. They got a couple grandkids, you know, okay. that they got to play around with, and I got to take over the business for them. So they got to see that continuation of the family business. But it was interesting because that, you know, original location in Clarksville, it was a very blue-collar store. Mm-hmm. I mean, I always say a six-pack of Bud and a pint of Kessler. That was... You know, our general sale, if you will. And through my time in corporate America, I'll give them one good thing. I traveled a lot for the job, and okay. that's where I discovered good beer. Whether, okay. you know, it was traveling overseas, whether it was going to, I had a lot of trips to Portland, Oregon for business, or Washington State, so many good microbreweries there, and just started falling in love with good beer then.
Sure.
Moved back into the area, and well, there's not a lot of good beer available here. You know, we had a few imports, but there just wasn't much available. And you know, locally, I know on this side of the river, really, Rich O's, the new Albanian pizza place now, they were about the only spot to really get good beer. But it encouraged me to say, man, there's a market here.
Yeah.
That there is good beer drinkers here. And slowly but surely started building our inventory up. And it's one of those things, you had to have a lot of patience, especially then, to get that word out that, hey, look at all this good beer we have.
Yeah, it seems. I mean, I'm always curious about this because I mean, there's thousands of you say of beer brands out there, and a lot of people talk about, you know, good beers. It's being made in a lot of different places. How do you decide, or how does a beer like catch on in a market like this? I mean, and what is it something you do a lot to promote, or does it come to you the other way?
It's a weird combo of both. You'll see brands that seem like they grow on the internet that there is so much hype for. And then suddenly that brand's in our market.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody, they start distribution here. A great example of that, Shorts. It's a brewery out of Michigan. We just started getting distribution of them 2 months ago. So it was a brewery. They were Michigan only. That was their credo. Well, you got shareholders to take care of. And, you know, brewery expands. Suddenly they're Michigan and Indiana and
there's a
Ohio.
Lot of markets out there.
Yeah, they've expanded to new markets, but it was always a brand, you know what, I can only get this in Michigan prior to this.
Uh-huh.
So there was a lot of hype behind it.
Yeah.
So that beer sold itself.
Yeah, it seems like, I'm dating myself here, but it seems like I can remember, like, back in the days when, like, Coors was special because, you know, it was only, you couldn't get it here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, New Belgium, Fat Tire, you know, for years that was the number one requested beer that we couldn't get. And New Belgium's probably been about 5 years ago. It hit the Indiana market. I think it hit Kentucky last year. But, you know, that was even – so New Belgium was a great success story for us. It was one of those few beers that would pull people from Kentucky to come over here and get. You know, it'd be nothing for a guy to pull up and buy five cases of Fat Tire because he can't get it in Louisville.
Huh.
You know, and he's buying for his neighbors and friends. But it was one of those beers that would let him do it. And, you know, now – you've got Yingling. You know, that's the great white whale.
Out of Cincinnati?
Out of Pennsylvania.
Okay.
So, but they closest distribution for us is Ohio, so Cincinnati more than likely for us, or Tennessee. Okay. But you can't get it in Indiana or Kentucky. And so by far now, the number one requested beer that we can't get. But that is, you know, that's your Moby Dick, you know, great white whale out there. You can't get it, so it's the greatest beer in the world.
The best kind is the kind of beer you can't get, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So, well, let's talk about one other topic. I know we talked earlier about the Kentucky-Indiana divide and how you, we'll just use the word struggle to get people to come over here. You know, what's that like for you, and what do you anticipate? I know we got this this tolling coming up in a few months.
Yeah, tolls scare me to death. So... Mm-hmm. It's, you know, we talked a little earlier, but yeah, to expand, it's been a struggle. And I think it's a struggle on both sides of the river to get people to want to cross.
Uh-huh.
You know, I've always joked that there must be a brick wall somewhere across the bridges that turn people around, that they can't get there. So you've got issues there alone, but now, boy, you're going to put a price tag to make people want to cross. And I think it's going to hurt businesses on both sides.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those, I understand that bridge has to get paid for, but... And maybe you built one bridge too many. That you could have built one.
A bridge too far, bridge too many.
A bridge too many. You could have built one bridge, stayed in budget, and kept us toll-free, I believe.
Yeah, but, yeah. Well, I guess it, you know, we all remember the battles that, you know, I can remember, like, in the 80s talking about getting a bridge built.
Mm-hmm.
And how important
it
was.
And it just couldn't happen.
It just couldn't happen, but now we got it. Mm-hmm. So we're going to learn to live with it and deal with it. So... you got any strategies for dealing with it? Anything you're planning?
No, you know, we'll do a little more advertising, I think, over in the Kentucky market. And we'll have to expand more on the differences. Here's what we have that you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And here's your reason to cross over.
Okay, here's your chance. What's your one thing that we have over here?
Right now, I'll tell you, a great new brewery that we just got, Cascade, out of Portland, Oregon. Great, great sour brewery. Sours are one of the hottest styles of beer out there right now. And that has flocked people across the river to get. You know, your beer connoisseurs, as soon as that brand, it got on our Facebook page and out on our website, people were on it.
All right, there you go. At Keg Liquors. I'm talking with Todd Ants, and the festival is when?
June 4th from 3 to 7 p.m. at the New Albany Amphitheater.
And we need to get our tickets.
Need to get your tickets soon. Yes.
All right.
If you just can't get enough, catch up on the news of the city's restaurant scene every single day by visiting www.eatdrinktalk.net. Steve and Rick share all the latest local scoop from Louisville's restaurants and bars. You can also find old episodes of the show and connect with the guys on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Eat well, my friends. Another episode next week.
Dessert? Yes, please.